Welcome to the Red Bearded Predator Podcast, where average folks talk about walleyes, whitetails, Wisconsin outdoors, and beyond.
It's like a beast. Oh my God.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, that's a nice eye.
Yeah. That was a fast one. Holy cow.
Tonight is a big night for talking fishing. We are going to be going deep into walleye. We're going to be talking a lot about electronics tonight and just our evolution over the years, especially Bud throughout his boats and so on. And we had a little bit of a discussion as we were fishing this weekend about how much of a role wind plays when we're walleye fishing and how it's really beneficial to get out in the wind. And we'll do a little recap of the week, and I figure why not do that, because we had a pretty solid day out on Saturday. So sound good to you, Bud?
Sounds good.
All right. Electronics. It's a fun topic to talk about. When you first started fishing, how much did you use electronics?
When I first started, I had an old Hummingbird with a grayscale, and every time you drew over something that was possibly a fish, a fish icon would pop up on the screen. That was my start of electronics.
Yeah.
And it was pretty much all I used it for was depth. That didn't even have a water temp crankcode on it.
Yeah, I think my first experience with electronics, I think it was called like an Eagle depth finder. I'm not sure if you remember those.
Yeah, well, technically, no, my old boat actually has an Eagle on it.
Okay, that's
An Eagle is the off-brand of Lorenz.
Okay, that's what my dad originally had in his boat many years ago. And like you said, when it made that blurb, I'm sure everybody remembers that blurb noise where it was like, did it, and like,
yeah,
the certain tones that it made, like, made it sound like a bigger fish.
You had small fish and big fish.
Yep, I remember that, and supposedly those are fish, but I don't know if they were actually fish or not. I suppose the Vexlar back in the day probably was more, I had more validity than those things did, I think.
But it was the greatest, best thing.
Yeah, it was. And yeah, I think you couldn't really tell much other than the depth. I agree with you. It was pretty much just a depth marker, and you couldn't really tell contour or anything like that. So,
well, you could probably tell weeds.
Yeah,
would come up with a straight vertical lines.
Yep, I remember that. Those freaking those are pretty awesome. So that was my first.
As far as telling hard bottom and rock and stuff like that, that was all out the window.
Yep. Man, I kind of miss those days a little bit, though. It made fishing a little bit more of a mystery, I think. So
yeah.
Myself, I fish out of a kayak, so I don't use much for electronics, but I fish with Bud for, I don't know, how many years have we been fishing together now? 16, 17?
17 years?
Yeah, something like that. And
we were like 18 or 19 when we started.
I think I was 17.
That's true. When we met, you were still in high school.
Yeah, I was still in high school.
You were still playing senior ball in high school.
Yeah. And my first experience with anything that was decent was in Bud's old smoker craft. I don't remember the depth finder that you had in that sucker. Do you still have that? Isn't that one at the front of your boat, maybe? Or did you have one before that?
Well, the one I had before was the grayscale. And then I upgraded that one to the HTS-5, which now I do have on the bow of this boat.
Okay.
But still, again, I kind of just use, we got that, we just put that on the bow, and that's mainly just because we wanted a graph for doing depth.
Yeah.
Running the trolling motor on the bow.
Yeah. It like, how valid do you actually think that was, that marked fish back in the day? You think it had any validity to it, or not really?
The HDS, I do.
Yeah.
You know, but as far as the one I had before that one, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and even like when I first got that one, I mean, that was foreign to me, because then it got rid of marking fish, and then you're just marking arches.
Yep.
And blobs.
Yep.
So then it was a whole new learning curve for me, trying to figure out what am I looking at.
So the one that you have at the front of the boat right now, does it have any other features besides just pretty much a depth marker and those arches?
That one, yeah, that's all it is. That one, it doesn't have GPS, doesn't have side scan, doesn't have down imaging, doesn't have anything like that. So, it's strictly just sonar.
But I remember back in the day, we kind of thought that depth finder was the cat's ass because it was actually marking fish.
That was, and I bought that one like when HDSs first came out. And I think that one, brand new, I think I still ended up paying $400 or $500 for.
Yeah.
You know, and that was 20 years ago.
Yeah. Well, was that the one that you picked up when we ended up doing our mega trip to Bass Pro Shops when we bought a bunch of gear, or is that a different depth finder?
That was just a cheap one that came with the trolling motor that we bought that day.
Oh, I gotcha.
That was just a Hummingbird Piranha or something like that.
Oh, I gotcha.
I think that one's still on the smoker craft. I think I left that one on there.
Okay. I gotcha. No, so it's just...
Yeah, that's like a $50 sonar.
Yeah. It's just amazing.
Pretty much that one, it's Mark's bottom.
Yeah, it's just amazing how we went from that grayscale to something that actually had arches, and it actually, like, you could see the bottom and a little bit of the contour. Did that second one you have, did it actually have water temperature on it too, or no?
Yeah, the HDS does have a water temp probe.
Okay, I knew that was, like, a really groundbreaking technology when that came out, that it could tell temperature. That was like huge back in the day too.
I mean, back in the day, we used to bring instant read thermometers with us to get surface temp.
Yeah.
You know, that was our way of getting surface temp, was bringing a thermometer with us.
Yeah, that's what I use in my kayak to figure out the surface water temperature. Still, I have one of those thermometers. So. And that's a good point for you guys who are kayak fishing who don't have the technology. One of those thermometers can work out very handy for you. But then we moved on to what was the next depth finder that you started using?
Well, I did end up adding an Eagle to the smoker craft, which was pretty much a mirrored image of the HDS. The only difference was that one had GPS on it. Okay. That one had a GPS and a card reader, so I could put a map chip in it.
Alright. And that...
So I pretty much took two subpar sonars and put them next to each other to give me one decent one.
And that was even prior to Navionics, correct? Wasn't that like cutting edge technology?
Well, that was before we had Navionics on our phones. You know, so that was the only way, because, well, before that, I do have it right here. All right, so this is a Lowrance H2O color. And this was actually what I had to use for GPS. And what's cool about this one is you can actually plug in a hotspots or an Navionics chip in it. So I did actually have this for quite a while.
Yeah.
And this is a good alternative, like your kayak guys. You know, if you're not running a whole head unit, but at least look at your map software.
Yeah, especially if you don't have Navionics, because I remember we used that pretty hardcore ice fishing back in the day.
Yep. Oh yeah, this has a whole bunch of old waypoints on it, and there's a reason it's still in my boat.
And I suppose the nice thing about that, where, you know, Navionics, I know you could download it to the phone, but you didn't need any cell service with that back in the day, so nope. That was another key feature.
Nope, that was just a map you know, the same mapping chip that I put in a sonar goes in there.
Yeah. Then what did you upgrade to after that then?
So then I got the Eagle. And those were the two units I ran on the smoker craft.
Yep.
Pretty much until I got rid of it, I got the new boat. Then on the new boat, what did it have? So that had a Lowrance Elite TI on it, which had GPS. So that gave me my GPS, my sonar, surface temp, a little bit better sonar than the HTS. So that's what was on here. I ended up mounting my old HDS next to it just to give me a second so I could have a sonar and then a chart plotter next to it. You know, and I didn't have to run split screen real tiny. I mean, I already run small sonars. I don't need to be splitting the screen even smaller. So that's what I ran in here for the last, I don't know, I think I've had this boat now for 3 years. And now this year we upgraded. I got moved the HDS to the front, and then I picked up the Hummingbird Helix, which now I got the down imaging, and I got the side imaging.
And can you just explain to people what side imaging and down imaging are?
So pretty much your down imaging is, going to be real comparable to your sonar, where it's just running like your 19 degree cone running straight down underneath your boat. And the down imaging, I believe, just gives a more clarified picture. I know if you're running in your 2D sonar and you go over a pot of fish, you just get a bunch of rapid arches all blend together. Where if you switch over to the down imaging, it's actually going to start picking up just smaller marks. But each little mark is an actual fish, and you'll actually be able to count out how many fish are in that pod. Say you go over rocks, and then you get the big wad of fish on top. You'll actually be able to count your school, actually know if it's worthwhile fishing and picking apart.
So, yeah, I mean, it just shows, like, how technology has kind of changed the fishing world over the past, what would you say, 20, 25 years or so. You go from gray and black blobs, not sure if they're fish, to like identifying fish and even what structures the fish are relating to.
Yep. I mean, you can tell the different bottoms. Like, you can tell from your graph by the different colors that it responds to on your screen represents a different hardness of the bottom. So you can actually tell if it's a rock bottom, if you got a sand bottom, or if you're in that mud muck bottom, just by the density of the return of the ping. You know, and it's just the way technology has come in the last, 10 years is leaps and bounds.
Yeah, it's absolutely phenomenal. Would you say, I don't want to say you've become a better angler, but how has technology helped you? Like, as an angler?
Definitely finding fish. I mean, it used to be, you used to go out to a spot and you fish the spot. You know, you were kind of just banking on the fish being there because everything made sense for him to be there.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think the biggest thing that we're still getting used to this technology is that you really got to trust the electronics, what they're telling you. Because I remember earlier this year, we're like, how good is this thing? And we drove around for, I don't know, couple hours one day, just identifying structure, identifying fish, identify what fish we're holding to. And we actually ended up catching a fish off of structure.
Found fish, and we fished those. We literally played the find the fish, catch the fish. And that was fun.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest confidence boosting things that I've personally been a part of when it comes to trusting fish electronics. And it seems like the more that you're using this technology, bud, the more your confidence seems to be growing as well.
Yeah. No, and I mean, just something as simple as the temperature probe. You know, I've learned that just the minute different surface temps, whether it's a half a degree or 3 degrees, that makes a difference of how the fish are going to be in that area. You know, if you had a big cold snap come through, you know, but then you find some warm water, that warmer water is going to be better.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just as something as simple as that, as far as the technology helps you out.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I think another learning curve that we've kind of done is, you know, since we're trusting our electronics, not fishing spots that don't hold fish, actually actively search for fish all the time. I mean, yeah. A lot of guys, they'll still pull up to a spot and, like Bud said, they'll fish it for a couple hours, where, hey, Bud might run his boat for an hour just trying to find fish, you know, because there's no point of just fishing where there are no fish. So
yeah, it's that. So many guys that the fish in the history spots.
Yep.
We caught fish here in the past, so let's fish here now.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, fish in the river, that current changes a little bit. Well, that's going to change where the fish are holding that day.
Yeah. And another thing that continued to open my eyes when we were out this past weekend as well is Bud was marking fish, and when Bud was marking fish, we were catching fish. Like, as soon as we were trolling over those pods, we caught those fish. I don't want to say we were hand over fisting them, but I mean, we were putting fish in the boat when we kind of expected to put fish in the boat. So
yeah, but with the amount of fish that we were marking, we should have caught a lot more, but I don't know. I still can't have a day like that. I don't know.
Well, we've
not been able to figure it out yet.
Yeah, we've come to the conclusion Bud just catches big fish. Not a lot of fish, just big fish. So, yeah, but I don't know. I just thought it'd be a useful discussion just to see how far you've come with technology and the gear that you're running with. I mean, I think it's a bittersweet thing. It's kind of awesome that we have that technology still, but it's almost like there's nothing that's a mystery. It feels like the world keeps on shrinking. And I don't think it's just that way with fish finders. It's something with trail cameras. It feels like all this technology is kind of shrinking our world, and there's not as many mysteries out there anymore.
And to put it in perspective, I'm not even on the top of the game as far as electronics nowadays.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm close to the top. I mean, I'm running side scan and down imaging. But now you have the 360 imaging, the live action, the live scope, where that's literally real time. I mean, it's to the point where you can point an object at something and they know exactly how far away the fish is.
Yep. And it can tell you if the fish are at 12 o'clock or 3 o'clock, and it's a continuous, the 360 is a continuous like radar image of like showing you where the fish are alive. So it's like, I don't know. This is a question I was going to propose to you. How far is too far with electronics?
You know, and when it first came out, whether or not it was jealousy because I can't afford the greatest, you know, and it does give you a huge advantage, okay? And as I look back at it, I compare it to a Vexlar. Well, how much different is it from a Vexlar? I mean, because a Vexlar, you're putting down a hole, and you're watching your bait, you're watching the fish, and you're watching the interaction. Now, how much different is that from the Panoptics? You can see your bait, you can see the fish, you can see how they interact to each other. I mean, I guess one of the differences with the Panoptics or the LiveScope is instead of your Vexlar just being straight down a hole, I mean, now you're talking a 100 or probably 300 foot circle. I mean, is that getting too far where it's, you know, it's taking a lot of guessing game out, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Is it too far? I mean, you still have to pick out the right bait. You still have to jiggle the worm just right to get them to bite it. And you still got to bury the hook in their mouth and reel it in.
Yeah.
I mean, you're ultimately still putting the ball in the fish's court. They still got to bite the hook.
Yeah.
Now, if you're casting out a 2-pound treble and snag him in the back, okay, well, then it is too far.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I could see where the difference is with that. And, I mean, just based off the technology, we even got cameras, especially in clear water, where you can see 30 to 50 feet now, and that's even real-time information. It's just, I don't know. Sometimes I'm just wondering. I wonder it with, like, trail cameras, like, how much is too much? I wonder if state agencies are going to ever limit it. Personally, I don't think they are, because you are right. You still have to put the correct bait. You still have to give the correct presentation. You have to figure out what type of mood they're in. But I don't know. It's just an interesting thought that I've had throughout the last couple of days. Like, how far are we going with technology? And it's going to be interesting to, as we move toward the future, what's going to be the next groundbreaking thing. I mean, like you said, we have panomics. Like, I if you get any more than that, it's, I don't know. Are these depth finders and stuff going to tell you what the fish's move or mood is based on their swimming? And
I mean, I guess, increasing the clarity so you know exactly what type of fish.
And that's a good point. I've seen some commercials that are coming out where you might have the ability to start telling what type of fish it is. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. You can definitely tell from shapes. You know, if you got one that's a mark that's 4 feet long, well, okay, that's probably a muskie, a northern sturgeon.
Yeah.
You know, versus small ones, you know, you're talking your panfish. You know, but, you know, pretty soon you can be able to tell the difference between a 12-inch walleye and a 12-inch bass, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a lot of valid points, bud. And I think it's kind of fun. This is where I think different types of angling is fun, because, for instance, when I'm on Bud's boat with all the technology he has, and I still got my kayak where it's like, you have no idea what's there other than using your own eyes. So, I don't know. I think it depends what type of mood a person's in. And that's kind of like deer hunting, too. I mean, some days you feel like shooting anything that walks, and others you want a big buck. So it's, I think each person has their own style, which I think is unique.
Oh.
So. I don't know. You have anything else more on electronics? I thought it'd be an interesting discussion.
I mean, I'm excited to see what else comes out. I mean, because they're always coming out with different stuff. But I don't know. I'll probably never be able to afford any of it, you know, the way it is now.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if they started making the transducers almost have more of an ability to be more mobile and smaller, I think. I could see that. I could see potentially wireless transducers.
I think that would be big.
Yeah.
I mean, I know they already start developing that for fishhawks. I don't know if you know what a fishhawk is.
No.
Okay, a fishhawk is... It's really big in the salmon and trout world.
Okay.
And Lake Erie fishing. But what it is it's just a big probe, and you drop it down to whatever depth you are going to be fishing at.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually gives you the real-time current, like, speed of wherever that is, including the current. So say like even like over ground, your boat's going at 5 miles an hour according to your GPS, but now you're going into the current. So now you drop that fish probe down, it'll actually read out you're going 8 miles an hour because that's the actual speed going against the current. And then it'll actually give you water temp from that distance too. Well, their newest model that came out, you actually drop this probe down on like 50 pound braid and you actually put in a transducer on the top of the water and it wirelessly transmits up all that information.
Wow.
You don't actually run a wire all the way down.
Wow. That's incredible. I haven't heard of that yet.
Yeah. So, I mean, if they're transferring that kind of information, I mean, it's probably just a matter of time before everything is done. Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, you know, everything like that.
Yeah. That's what I think the next big boom in technology is going to be for fishing. That's just super interesting that I have to look into that tonight. I'm going to do that after the podcast. And you said it was Fishhawk?
Fishhawk, yep.
All right. I'll check that out after this podcast. Cool. I just think things are going to continue to get cheaper. I mean, I think it's almost...
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I know, right? I'm looking forward to that so I can rig something up on my kayak. And it'd be nice to have almost the super small screens with like high resolution for the kayak anglers. I know they have some stuff out, but it'd be nice to almost have like something on your phone size that has really good resolution to where you can see exactly what, you know, just what information you're getting off the phone with that high resolution. So that's what I think is going to be next.
And probably another thing would be an increased battery life.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, all these, you know, running side scan, you know, and these high ping rates and stuff like that, I mean, they really drain down the battery in a hurry. You know, now for you kayak guys, I mean, you don't have a way to recharge your battery out there.
Yeah.
You know, or me, every time I run my big motor, I'm recharging my battery. Where it'd be nice for you guys to be able to have, like, all the same technology that I have, you know, with a smaller transducer, you know, something that can shoot, like, through your kayak. You're not mounting to the outside.
Yeah.
You can actually just mount on the floor.
Yeah.
And you could actually have down imaging and side scan, because... that's nothing for you guys to paddle 4 miles an hour.
No, not at all.
You know, but have all that technology, but you can run it off a smaller battery.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's, I mean, lithium technology keeps on getting better and better over the time too. And I remember just watching an in-depth outdoors episode over this winter. And even with their mega 360 imaging, they were using, I mean, tiny lithium batteries that lasted for a full day. It is unbelievable. What I think, yeah, I agree with you. Battery size and battery life are going to be two major innovations to come yet. So, yeah. Yeah, super interesting to think about. I like getting into the weeds of this stuff. It's weird. It's weird to think about how far technology has come from the grayscale blurbs to being able to...
Think of probably back in the 70s and 80s when you had the Lowrances that printed out on a piece of paper.
Oh, that's, you know, awesome.
Like a lie detector test or something like that, you know?
Yep, I remember that.
You had enough paper on your boat in order to fucking go out fishing.
Yeah, I remember that. That's crazy. You know? That's absolutely crazy. Yeah, I don't have anything else, but it's going to be fun to see what comes down the road. So
every couple of years, they'll come up with something new, though.
Yep, just to make...
They'll figure out something weird, some way that it's bigger and better.
Yep. Just to make some more money.
Yep. But hey, that's the name of the game when you're in business.
Yep. That's exactly right. So, I don't have anything else. How about you?
As far as electronics?
Yeah.
If anybody's got any questions, I could try to answer them, you know.
Yeah.
Here, we'll get back to them, but, it's definitely, it changed the way I fished, and I've come to grasp that the electronics can tell you a lot more about the water than you'll ever know.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think Bud's been working with the side imaging and whatnot for a little while now, but I think there's still a learning curve to go along with it.
Oh yeah, I still see stuff and I have no flipping clue what I'm looking at. The thing with just picking it up now, I haven't gone to lakes and looked at like weeds and stuff like that, different kinds of weeds. I still have to learn all that. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Because I know it's going to help us out in the long run when it comes to ice fishing.
Yeah.
I know there's a whole bunch of lakes we want to scout out for ice fishing now with it.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I'm looking forward to most is trying to get on that weed slip bobber bite that everyone talks about. That looks like a super fun bite, and that's going to be super exciting to do with the side imaging.
Yep.
So, other than that, I don't have anything else. We can get into fishing in the wind a little bit and explain how that's been super beneficial for you.
With many years, it helps. I'm in a little bit of a bigger boat. I feel a little bit more comfortable. In the old cigar boat, you got into a good 2-foot wave and you kind of got a little tipsy. So I used to always fish whatever shore the wind was coming off of. Because there was less wind. And you weren't fighting the trolling motor in the wind. You weren't fighting the boat spinning around on you. But we also caught a lot less fish.
Yes.
And now with fishing, and I noticed it real big this year, fishing the east shore of the bay more. Because we always get our west winds, our northwest, southwest winds. And I've been fishing a lot of the reef points, and anytime that there's a good wind where I'll be out there, I won't even need my trolling motor. I'll troll with the wind and I'm trolling like 2 miles an hour just with the wind pushing me. But hands down, there was one day I was out with Tony. We never even got all 6 lines in the water and we had 2 fish. And what was there? Trying to think of the third day. Oh, there was a day when I was out there with Andy. Same deal. Wind was blowing in on the point real hard. And I think we got all 6 lines in. But we had one going down as we were setting up in the last one. We caught that fish. That one ended up tangling in another one, which then tangled into my motor. And we're dealing with that. And then pretty soon we look up and this orange board's looking funny. So we reel that one in, and it was a 27.5-inch walleye. So, and again, in a matter of 10 minutes, we popped 2 big fish. But those are the days that I was fishing a wind-blown point, 10, 15-mile-an-hour winds, 3-foot rollers going into it. But with all that wind blowing in, I don't know if it's water or just there's so much surface breakup that the walleyes feel comfortable going that shallow, or all the bait are getting blown up. But just hands down, those are my best days when I'm out there dealing with 3-foot waves in the wind.
Yeah. And another thing, it might be a little bit warmer water getting pushed up too, is just another thought. And we've noticed how much water temperature has really made a difference. It seems like we find those warmer pockets. It seems like the fish are holding there, especially in spring, it seems like.
Yep.
But I was gonna say too, I think fishing in the wind at this point, in with the equipment we have to work with, it seems like we have to be doing some sort of, I don't want to say power fishing, but something a little bit more aggressive, like trolling, and just where we're able to move baits, I should say. Like the finesse style, I think it's a little difficult yet, just based off the gear that we have at this time.
Yeah, and I think anybody will tell you that. I mean, you're not, if you're on a 15-mile-an-hour wind, you're not going to be able to sit there and pitch a eighth ounce jig with a minnow.
Yeah.
And unless you're freaking dialed in on your gear and you've been doing it for 20 years, I'm sure there's guys that can do it, but I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
I mean, I could probably do like a rip and wrap or a heavy jig in a plastic.
Yeah. Yeah, and
it's most likely you gotta be casting with the wind, you know, so you're gonna be probably spot locked, you know, fishing out of the back of the boat. You know, you're not gonna be able to like fan cast or anything.
Yeah. And it seems like you just wanna keep your, when you're fishing in wind, keep your line with the wind, because if you start getting bows and all that sort of stuff, you won't feel bites. You'll miss fish.
Yeah, and I think in like big waves like that, it's hard to watch your line. So it's hard to watch for that tick, you know. You know, a lot of guys say that, where you watch your line so you can watch for that little tick, you know, on the slack line. But in 3-foot waves, I don't think you can really do that.
No, I agree with you. And I think this is just based off of all of our experience from fishing in the wind. Because I remember back in the day in the smoker craft, we would just get frustrated and be like, screw this. This is brutal. Let's go hide somewhere.
Yeah, that's what we did. We could find the little back bay that wasn't getting beat up.
Yeah. But I think you're right. Our catch rates have gone down. We're down back when we used to do that. And I feel like they're rising as we get more experience fishing in the wind. And I think we're being more efficient in the wind too. We're understanding, okay, we got to use a little bit more power type presentations, or we got to troll instead of being inefficient with our presentations. And even if the fish aren't biting, just cover ground till you find fish that will bite the presentation that you're having to present them on that day.
Oh.
I thought this topic would go in well with recapping our bite from the weekend. Because, correct me if I was wrong, bud, but it seemed like we had, a southwest wind, and we were fishing kind of a bay with a flat coming off of it. And it seemed like just the way the current was setting up, there was a point that came off of it. All that wind was pushing bait fish, warmer water in, so that those type of tactics paid off this weekend.
That's how I pictured it, you know, I watched the wind all day and how it was setting up, and I'm willing to bet if we went offshore, we would have got beat up a lot, but I also knew this spot's been good for the last few weeks, and like you say, that wind was kind of hitting that point, and that point was giving us a wind break, but it was still moving the water through that area.
Yeah. And I think some sort of eddy was forming in there, because I'm not thinking of, you know, one of those eddies that you find on a small river. It seems like it's like a big water eddy that you can't actually see the current, but you know it based off what the wind doing and how the land set up. Do you think something like that was going on?
Yeah, I mean, it's no different. The easiest way to explain it is probably like a thermal.
Yeah.
You know, if you look down at it, it's got to be acting kind of the same as like a thermal up for hunting.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you on that. And it felt like, yeah, it just set up perfect. And just to describe the bite that we were on, we weren't doing anything crazy. We were trolling, and we were kind of at the... Were we at the base of a little rock structure, bud? How did that set up?
Well, yeah, coming offshore, you pretty much had scattered rock bars that they would come out to about 14 to 15 foot. And then you'd have a little steep break off of that down to like 20. You know, and that's like the first main break on the east shore.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where we started, and that's where we actually picked up most of our fish.
Yeah. And I was just watching Bud mark the fish on the GPS, and it was interesting that all the fish that we were catching were coming out in this probably what, maybe 400 yard square area, something like that. So
yeah, I mean, my graph is pretty littered right now.
Yeah,
you know, but it's all, and that's from last weekend that you and Lisa came up, and the weekend before where it was me and Andy for the tournament. You know, we just started stacking, and we're stacking waypoints on top of each other.
Yeah. And these fish have been pretty quality fish. I mean, when me and Lisa were out this past weekend, I think we caught a 19, a 21, 24, 25, then almost a 27. So, I mean, we're picking up good fish off this pattern here. So.
Yeah, that 19, that's the smallest fish I've caught in that area.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything else has been bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess, like you said, the only thing that's been frustrating, we haven't picked up the numbers.
Yeah, but, you know, that's my biggest problem. I catch big fish. I don't catch the eaters. I don't catch numbers. You know, but, you know, coming from a tournament stance, I only need 5 good bites every day I go out.
Yep, that's correct.
That's all I look for, really.
Yeah, but overall, just to recap the rest of the weekend, I had one heck of a time up there. I talked to Lisa on the way home, and it sounded like she wanted to go out the very next day. What was that?
The next day wasn't as good as the first day.
Oh, did you go out there on Sunday?
Yeah, we made it out on Sunday.
So, I do have a question. Did you guys still have a west wind, or how did that play out?
What did we end up with? Well, I mean, really...
Because I know for us on Saturday night, when we had that wind shift out of the east, the bite just died. It was...
Yeah. It came out of the east or the south. Yeah, I think it actually came out south. Because where that... it's the east shore, but that stretch actually runs west and east. And I think it was coming right off the land, so it actually came out of the south.
Okay.
But it was coming right off the land, but it... In that circumstance, it's pushing the water away from shore.
Yeah.
Is what it's doing. You know, wherever we were, that's what was happening, is the wind was pushing water away from shore. So I think that was kind of dispersing all the warm water. It was blowing up bait fish. It was jacking up the current. And, yeah, bite died down on us.
Yeah, and I think for that spot, it almost seems like you need some sort of west to it, whether it's southwest, northwest, just some sort of west, it seems like you need in that spot.
Yeah, you need the wind blowing right into the shore. I mean, that's the more I'm learning. You know, if you go offshore, it might be a totally different thing, but if you're fishing shorelines, you gotta have that wind blowing into it.
Yeah, yeah.
If the waves aren't crashing, I don't think it's worth it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think you could use that tactic on a lot of different lakes. I don't think it has to be the Bay of Green Bay. I think any lake that you get a windblown point or windblown shore, windblown flat, windblown rock bar, I'd say attack it. So
yeah, especially if it's been consistent for the last, I mean, I'd say 48 hours. If you've been somewhat having the same wind, I mean, that stuff's going to start stacking up on that shore. It'd be my guess.
Yeah. And based off of a lot of the stuff that we fished this year, it seems to be holding true. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, if you got wind blowing into shore, moral of the story, try and fish it. You'll probably, you'll pick up fish. Yeah, that's all.
Don't put waves over the bow. Don't do anything stupid, but, I mean, that's the place to be.
Yep. Yeah, that's...
As far as Sunday, I would say the wind was a negative wind. I mean, they were said it was a northeast, but there was pretty much just no wind out there whatsoever. But we ended up, we took Dale out. We just wanted to get him out in the boat. So it was like, we didn't start fishing until 9:30, which you know as well as I do, that's not my style.
Yeah.
But no, we had fun. We ended up we hit up University Bay, and I don't know, I saw guys look like they were catching walleye. Me, I have yet to have good luck in University Bay. I found, I'll just call it the farmyard, and I think we fished for like 3 hours, and I think I boated like 12 sheep then.
I like that. We'll call that the farmyard, not University Bay anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, anytime I go to University, it's just a farmyard for me. That's
just a bunch of sheep, eh?
Guys say that sheephead and walleye hang out together and all this, but man, I'd catch freaking more sheephead in there than anything.
Yeah. So, I do have to ask, you taking any of those sheephead home?
I may have filmed a cooking episode at home that evening, yes.
right on. I don't want to give the spoiler of how it tastes or anything. We'll have to make the people tune into the video, don't you think?
Subscribe to the channel and watch it. It'll be up eventually.
Yeah. That'll be a fun video to watch. So, yeah, but I agree with you. It seems like you're right. The walleyes and sheephead, at least in University Bay, don't hang out together.
Not in my eyes. I think out of all the years of fishing, every year I go in there, because everybody says there's a big bite in University Bay, and I go in there and I fish it 3-4 times a year. I think in the last 10 years, I think I've caught 5 walleye in there. That's kind of strong. I can't figure it out. Anybody who wants to freaking take me out or come out my boat and show me how to do it, feel free.
Yeah, I agree with you. The times I've been out with Bud there, it's been, like you said, a farmyard of sheep. Yeah. So, yeah, but that's all I got about the week in recap. It was fun. Lisa had a great time. I had a great time. So thanks. Appreciate that.
That's the main thing. As long as she had fun.
Yeah.
Now she's caught bigger walleye than her dad's, so.
Yeah. And we'll have a video coming out on Thursday. It turned out to be a really good video, so hopefully you guys tune into that. And for you guys who are listening on our podcast, check out our YouTube channel, Red Bearded Predators, and you'll see our videos on there. Now, we might as well get into Would You Rather.
All right. This is a good one. And I was really hoping Andy was going to be here, because I think he'd dig this one too. And I did just think of this one a few hours ago.
All right.
Would you rather take a 10-mile backpack camping trip to some remote area to see this immaculate view that only 100 or so people have seen? Or would you rather take a backpacking tour camping at state parks where everybody has seen?
A 10-mile backpack. How heavy is this backpack? How many nights are we staying?
Well, you're just going in to see the view.
Oh, just...
So you got a tent, you know, dehydrated meal. Pretty much, you're taking a 10-mile hike and to see this absolute beautiful mountain valley with waterfall into a lake with trout jumping in, and there's a bear on the shore. You're picturing heaven.
All right.
The absolute most beautiful freaking thing that that a picture just does not describe. You have to see it.
All right.
This spot, like only 100 or so people have ever seen it. So either you can do that and see that view, Or you can go do a tour of state park camping trips and seeing like Yosemite and Yellowstone, Mount Rushmore and Highlands, where everybody in the country is.
Huh. So, 20-mile round trip, eh?
Yeah.
That's a heck of a trip. Oh, we did.
I mean, you can split it up through a couple days, but
yeah, we did get
going at your own leisure.
We did get a comment from Perry Dunn. He said he tried Sheephead and he said he didn't care for it. So, well, Perry, you're gonna have to see what our thoughts are in our next video. So, after thinking about it, I would do the 10-mile hike in, no doubt about that. I don't care if it would be uphill, downhill. Yeah, that 100 people have seen, I would do that in. How about you?
Mine would probably, like, that 20 miles would probably take me a week to do, but I would hike in to go see a remote view that nobody has seen.
Yeah.
I took a picture. It's actually out of the deer stand that I shot my first deer out of. And I shot my bigger muley out in Colorado.
Okay.
So it's out of that tripod. And actually, from that tripod is where we're hunting close enough to where I could see four different mountain ranges. And each mountain range was in a different state.
Oh, that would be super cool, dude.
Yeah. And I just, you think about it, is where that tripod is, okay? It's on private land.
Yeah. So
the only people that have gotten that view are guys that have hunted that tripod.
Yeah.
So think of how many guys actually hunted under that stand and got to see and stay. They hunted and they saw four different mountain ranges.
Yeah, that would be incredible. Yeah, that's, I mean, why I love hunting so much, even. I mean, you think about it, even national parks, yeah, they're beautiful, but how many people have, like, seen that type of stuff where I think a lot of people, I think this is one of the most overlooked parts of hunting or anything like that, where you're, like, on a journey and, like, going on some national forest land that isn't marked up or anything like that. It's just amazing to think about how many people have actually walked through that.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, national parks, they're well-groomed, they have paths and all that. State parks have all that jazz. But, I mean, when you're hiking out in the woods on an unpaved trail where you kind of go at your own pace, pick your own direction, I don't think anything gets much better than that.
Yeah, it's the journey.
Yeah.
It's what you take in while you're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, whether, I mean, and it doesn't have to be hunting, it be fishing. It can be, I mean, last week me and Lisa went mushroom hunting. Like, it's a spot I was never at before, and it wasn't very far off the road, but just the way the timber was, it just laid out super cool. It was pines, trout stream. It was just super cool. Like, and it was like 15 minutes outside of Madison, and it's an experience that I'm happy I went on. I don't know. Yeah, that's a great question. I would be curious to hear Andy's answer on that one. So,
all right, Andy, you're up. Now you have a full week to answer this.
Yes.
You better come up with a good answer.
I think we should make him comment under this video because we don't get any comments. So, Andy, if you hear this on the podcast or you watch this video cast, you better comment. I want to hear an answer.
I want to see it in writing, and we'll grade it, and then you have to repeat your essay next week's episode.
Oh, I like that. We'll make it like a book report.
Yeah. It's just punishment for not being here tonight.
Yeah.
He's got to get up and read his book report next week.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah, I was honestly hoping to get Archer on here because I want to. Next week, Andy, I know you're not on tonight. I want to hear about Archer's experience hunting turkeys and how that went for him. So.
See what he thought.
Yeah, yeah. Even if it's short. So Archer, maybe you'll come on next week. Come on, buddy. It'd be fun to talk to you about your turkey hunt. So. Yeah, I don't have anything else tonight. I appreciate Perry Dunn commenting though, and. I want to try some sheephead now. So I think next time you're not pre-fishing or anything, I want to go out with you and catch a sheephead, and I want to try it myself too.
Alright, so. Help yourself, man. Come up anytime.
Yeah. So, other than that, do you have anything or ready to close her down?
I think we can close her down.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. Alright, folks.
Oh, drop comments of what we should talk about. We're running out of like ideas.
Yeah, I know. It's getting to a tough time of year for us. Once we get to summer, besides fishing, there ain't a lot going on. I mean, we're about halfway through the turkey season, and oh, that's another thing. I guess I'm taking my brother hunting this weekend, so that should be fun.
Yeah, it should be fun.
Yeah, I'm excited for
that. Good luck, you guys.
Yeah, he's never turkey hunted before, so I'm just hoping to get. I'm trying to get something that him and I can do, like, because he doesn't have the patience for deer hunting. I just realized that over the years. So we got to find something. Yeah. But, I'll report back to you guys next week on how that hunt goes. I'm looking forward to it. So
I hope you have better luck than I did.
I hope so. I mean, we're probably going to be in an area with more turkeys. We're going to be in zone 2 than what you had. But, I mean... Zone 2 is going to have a lot of pressure. It already has had a lot of pressure. A lot of
pressure and not much land.
Yeah. So we're kind of in the opposite scenario, bud. So, yeah, it's going to be fun. Out of that, yeah. Are you going fishing this weekend or anything?
I plan on going out Sunday.
Okay.
I got to go make a barbecue pit Saturday, and then we're planning on fishing on Sunday.
Yeah, hopefully we get a bird down on Saturday so I can sneak out fishing with you. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, we'll go to University Bay and get you a sheephead.
Yeah, then we can go somewhere else. Yep. So, all right, I don't have anything else. So I appreciate everyone who tuned in. I appreciate the comment from Perry tonight. Check us out on all of our social media pages, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. I'm looking into getting on whitetail.com because I heard some good things about that because it's a forum for all hunters and fishermen. And that's all I got. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. And hopefully you guys enjoyed the podcast version of this too. We'll keep on coming out with more of these. And we hope you guys have a good night. We'll see you guys later.